Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And oh, yeah. Like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to Tuesday. Sometimes we like to refer to this as a Taco Tuesday. So hit me some Taco Tuesday there, Big Rig.
But more importantly, y'all know what today is, right?
It's
welcome to it. All right, Taco Tuesday is underway. Welcome to Right Side Radio, and again, that is Big Rig pushing the buttons on the board. Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Good. How you doing?
I'm good. It is raining across parts of the listening area, which is to say, it's raining somewhere in North Alabama right now.
Yeah, I was going to cut my grass today, but never mind.
Looks like you got to get out of jail free card on that one.
Yep.
Just tell the lovely wife I said it's far too wet for that. This is, yeah.
I already told her.
Okay, good. There you go. You're squared away. All right. Hey, we got a great show laid on for you today. No guests today, man. I thought, I got some content. I want time to unpack it. We're just going to go for it. So here's the deal. I've got a triple dipper just filled up with stuff you're going to want to know about. So hit it again, Big Rig.
The triple dipper. Three stories you've got to know.
That's right. The triple dipper. Three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. Number one, the Veep Stakes. The Veep Stakes. Who's going to be the vice president? Who is Trump going to name? And oh, by the way, why are Democrats not so happy with their current Veep who could step in and wind up being the president? What the heck? Listen, the office of the vice president, it may seem ceremonial. It might even at times feel like that place where you just wait around for the president to die so you know whether you got a real job. It's not. It's far more than formal. It's far more than just, you know, state dinners and the occasional foreign head of state funeral. It's a pretty big deal. You got to be able to govern on day one. We're going to talk about the Veep Stakes, why it's important, and who are on the short list right now. We'll unpack that for you as number one on the Triple Dipper. Number two, So sometimes when I am sorting through the show, getting it resourced for the early morning, I'm sitting there just grinding away so I can bring you guys all the resources. I find myself thinking, man, look at that wokeness. Holy cow, the wokeness. How much look at all the wokeness. And I wind up with what I like to call a buffet of wokeness, a veritable cornucopia, a vast plethora, if you will, of wokeness. Yes, indeed, we're going to have a round of adventures in woke world, number two on the Triple Dipper. And then number three, there's been a lot of talk about invoking the 25th Amendment regarding Biden. Is it justified? How would that work? What precedent do we have for it? What happens if they actually do it? I mean, how does it happen? And who has to participate? And could it even happen? What are the predictions right now? So number three on the Triple Dipper, I'm calling it Invoking the 25th. This is pretty interesting. You're going to want to hear this because I guarantee you some of y'all are sitting around, you know, at the water cooler or in the fast food line or talking to friends on social media, and someone's going to say, invoke the 25th. Well, I'm going to arm you for that conversation. That's number three on the Triple Dipper. All right, let me start the show, as always, with the opening monologue, The Right Side Way. So much is being said right now about who's going to be the Democrat nominee. I mean, have you ever seen such a goat rodeo? And then yesterday, in the midst of all the news of the world and the fact that hot wars are raging, the economy is struggling, all of it, the only question the media could ask was related to the president's health. But it got quickly shut down. Biden Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre scolded the media for daring to ask why a well-known medical doctor who specializes in Parkinson's disease had visited the White House not once, but eight times. At a time when the whole world has questions about Biden's ability to govern the affairs of state, some intrepid reporter tracked down the White House visitor logs and realized this Parkinson's specialist had made eight trips in 8 months to visit the White House physician. The White House physician, the president's personal doctor. Keep in mind that some of the early signs and symptoms of Parkinson's can include things like slurred speech, raspy voice, stiff gait, muscle stiffness overall, difficult posture, even cognitive impairment. Sound familiar? All of which, by the way, is very important because it's his health, yes, but it's also our country. It's our lives. It's our national security. It's our economy. But according to KJP, that's private information. Cannot be discussed. How dare they ask such a question? Do you remember when the story broke on national news a couple of years ago that Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband, Paul, was attacked in their San Francisco home? It resulted in him being hospitalized. Nancy was apparently in D.C. From initial reports, the San Francisco PD responded to the call at the Pelosi's home at roughly 02:30 in the morning, basically the middle of the night. Upon arrival, the first media reports indicate that as they entered, the police apparently witnessed 82-year-old Paul Pelosi and another man named David DePappy struggling with each other, both men trying to grab a hammer. We're told by reports that DePappy was allegedly yelling, "Where's Nancy?" Before police could intervene, apparently DePappy wrested the hammer away and struck Pelosi in the head at least twice, which resulted in him being hospitalized with a fractured skull. And it got weirder. DePappy was a well-known drug user, a nudist activist. He lived in a dilapidated old school bus with BLM and gay pride flags. And wait for it. He was in the country illegally, having long overstayed his Canadian visa. We were told that despite having a security system, despite having security cameras, despite having security in the neighborhood, that DePappy had easily broken into the house of one of the most powerful figures in all of world politics. Despite the fact that this occurred in a crime-friendly sanctuary city in a crime-friendly sanctuary state, DePappy was held without bail. Never mind that criminals walk free within minutes and don't even get arrested if they steal less than $1,000 in San Francisco. So many questions. So many questions. Like, who made the 911 call? How did it go? Does DePappy even know Pelosi? Who's the person that met them at the door? We found out more later, but for the longest time, we were told you cannot answer any questions. We cannot answer your questions. In fact, don't ask questions. The left-wing media and the elected Democrats, they circled the wagons, and that's what made me mad. We were told that to question it was wrong and obviously hatefully politically motivated rhetoric. The liberal DA of San Francisco initially announced that the 911 call would not be released. Even outlets like Politico, who initiated some of the early reports, began stumbling all over themselves, trying to figure out how to present their story and demand that those who questioned things be silenced. It was an amazing level of hypocrisy. I say that because I have vivid memories of questions and questions and more questions, where nothing was off limits. Back in 2017, remember when Alabama's Roy Moore was running for the U.S. Senate? An allegation of sexual misconduct arose that was over 40 years old. An allegation that has never been substantiated, by the way, but which caused a complete media-feeding frenzy. Roy Moore is from Etowah County. At that time, I was both the state senator for Etowah County and I was the Republican Party chairman for Etowah County. So, in short, every single day I was bombarded with calls and emails and requests for interviews from outlets all over the nation. I finally had to tell my secretary there'd be no more interviews. But the whole community was feeling it. Reporters literally walked the halls of the Gadsden Mall and stood out on the streets in downtown. I'm not kidding. And they literally stopped strangers asking if they had any information. I was at a high school football game myself one night and had a reporter from the Washington Post come up and ask me for an interview. You couldn't swing a dead cat without hitting a reporter whose sole aim in life was to dig up some unsubstantiated dirt. It got so bad, y'all, that my secretary came in one day and said, "You are not going to believe what happened." All I could say was, "What now?" Apparently her husband, who was retired, was at home and answered a knock at their front door only to find a man he'd never seen before standing on his front stoop. The man identified himself as a reporter from some major news outlet. The man literally said that in talking to folks around town, he had learned that my secretary's husband had been a lifeguard at the YMCA 40 years prior. 40 years ago. So he had tracked down his home address and cold called their front door because allegedly, Roy Moore used to swim at that YMCA and the reporter wanted to know if the husband had any interesting information. He said no and to shut the door in his face. Look, regardless of how you feel about Roy Moore, put that aside for a minute and just consider what we saw in 2017 regarding a bare allegation against a political candidate compared to what we saw in the actual event in which a crime took place at the home of the person in the line of succession of the presidency. In 2017, the Democrats had their true warm-up to the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation. In 2022, they flipped it and they used bully tactics to defend one of their own. And they're doing it again now with Joe Biden's health. The left will ask every question. They'll chase every lead. They'll make up any fact as long as it fits their agenda and gives them some kind of good clickbait news that may or may not even be true, but at least drives people to their social media. At the same time, though, when actual questions exist, well, that's actually called journalism. Really, don't make up the stories. But at the same time, when the story exists, the First Amendment guarantees us a free press and we should be allowed to ask the questions, all the questions, and we should be allowed to get to the truth, the real truth. It is not reasonable to think for a second that what took place with Roy Moore in Etowah County in 2017 was good reporting. It was not. It was sordid. It was tabloidish. But the idea of questioning, though, is supposed to be at the heart of journalism. So while I don't believe they went about it ethically, I will say I understood their motivation for the next great scoop. But now we're told that questioning's off limits. Now we're told that to probe and ask basic details for clarification is bad form. Why did a Parkinson's specialist make 8 trips to the White House? Is the president impaired? Who knows this and chose to cover it up? I don't want him to have Parkinson's. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. But if he does, then give us some clear and unequivocal medical proof that he's not impaired by an insidious and debilitating disease. Look, I'm glad the media has finally awakened. Shame on them for stalling and obfuscating and even covering up what we've been seeing all along. Do all the things that a good reporter should do. Always ask for clarity. I can smell the stink of media hypocrisy right now. I know, because I've seen the other side. But at least now, they're finally asking the right questions. I say ask the questions. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. There you have it. I mean, the liberal media, the left, has shown clearly that if they can undo something on the right, they will do whatever it takes, ask more questions, paint more images, give you all kinds of word salads to try and project what they want to basically project. But when it's on their side, holy cow, how dare you ask the question? Well, the media better get back to its First Amendment right to be free. It is time to ask all the questions. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, saving the world one soundbite at a time. By the way, breaking news. I say it's breaking. Breaking news is that apparently the Democrats, Senate Democrats, are having a meeting to discuss Biden. I've never seen anything like this. There's always been times when you have like members of leadership expressing concerns about the president's judgment on a certain issue. I've never seen one where they're expressing concern about his judgment on any issue from his own party. I mean, granted, politics being what it is, and the polarized politics we've had, especially in the last 10 years, has been, you know, you expect this from, like, if this was Republicans having a meeting to talk about whether or not we should, you know, pursue Biden, yada, yada, yada. But nonetheless, it's the Democrats about their own guy. So anyway, that meeting's happening right now. Text lines are open, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Text it or call it. We'll take you on both. Let's see what we got in the text line already here. John from Harvest says, Phil, good monologue. As we constantly can see, modern journalism is all about deciding which facts the public should not know because they might reflect badly on Democrats. It does feel that way sometimes, doesn't it? That's why Right Side Radio is here for you, man. Navy Phil from Athens says, I believe the press is attempting to shift the blame. They as well have known Joe had issues and chose to lie because they believe the American people are not smart enough to figure it out. Well, this is a classic case. You're right, Navy Phil, you're right. This is a classic case of don't believe your own eyes. Listen to what we tell you. The only ones who don't want to admit this are the ones who are fearful of Trump being elected. I'm talking about like fearful. There are Democrats right now who are openly calling for him to step down. Some of that's going to be because they are politically astute. They see the winds of change and they want to be on the right side of history, not because it was a statesmanlike decision. But there are some who I believe are actually saying, look, for the good of the country, please, Mr. President, never seen anything like this. Although, listen, I take that back. We have seen stuff like this, and I'll talk about it more in Dipper number one here momentarily. Jeff from Indiana says, hey, Phil, it's a shame you're not part of the left-wing media, because then you would have gotten the first memo to throw old Joe under the bus. And then you would have gotten the second memo telling you to pull him out from under it. They don't know which way to go right now. It is true, man. I'm just glad we're the ones driving the bus for the moment. John from Huntsville says, Phil, spectacular monologue. Also, here we go. Did you hear that some of the grocery stores in Pell City... Brother, are you reading my notes? Did he read my notes? You put the all the resources up today, right?
Yeah. That's what he might be doing, actually.
I'm just wondering.
Reading the resources.
That is actually, you know what? I'm not even going to read your full text, John, because it would, I will. Did you hear that some of the grocery stores in Pell City are installing ammo vending machines? Yes. By the way, Big Rig already earned 5 Chuck Norris exercise credit points, Chuck Norris sized extra credit points for his awesome Taco Tuesday sound effect. However, Phil has earned 5 Arnold Schwarzenegger sized credit points. Ooh, for his spectacular monologue.
But Chuck Norris is supposed to be the
best.
There's
an entire new grading system going on. Do what?
Chuck Norris is supposed to be the best, though.
Did you just contradict the grade giver?
So where does
John, do Arnold... I get extra points because he just contradicted your grading scale?
Arnold is cool. He did Terminator, but
he did Terminator.
But Chuck Norris is supposed to be the best.
Chuck Norris wasn't he a gold medalist in karate? Mm-hmm. But Arnold Schwarzenegger was Mr. Olympia 7 times.
And Terminator.
So there you go. All right. Listen, we got all kinds of stuff laid on for you. Coming back here in a minute, we're going to jump right into Dipper number one. We're going to unpack the Veep stakes. So who's Trump going to pick? And oh, by the way, do the Democrats, are they having buyer's remorse about who they picked, being Kamala Harris? I would say the answer to that is yes. And has Trump got a short list? Yes. We're going to talk about what we know so far, and we expect a decision on that. In fact, he's got to. He's going to the... Listen, he's keeping it close to his vest for the right reasons, I guess. But I think it's time to go ahead and let her rip. All right, more on this. Veep Stakes coming up. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, I'm talking about Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. By the way, John from Huntsville, Big Rig, he just made sure that I knew that he actually read the ammo story himself last night. He did not see it in our resources. Okay. Sorry, John, I did not mean to impugn your character. If you need to take away points, I understand.
I guess he's just on top of things.
I'd say that's, generally speaking, the way our audience is. But yes, John is always on top of things. There, I got my points back. John from Brownsboro says, my dad always says, if you go to sell a man a horse, it's not on you to tell him it has the broken leg. He can see it for himself. Wow. Buyer beware is the law in Alabama. We don't have to show the president has no clothes. It just doesn't hurt to point it out, though. That just felt like old man wisdom right there. Like somebody sitting in a rocking chair on the front porch saying, let me tell you how life is, son. That's what it felt like right there. John, good text. Bruce from Springville says, in the Bible, Jezebel wore the pants in the house. In modern times, Jezebel Harris is just barely potty trained. Wow. Molly from Huntsville says, the Dems don't seem to mind old Joe until the world saw his incompetence. Yeah, you know what's crazy? And Molly, by the way, good point. But what's crazy is we were seeing it, but there was this complete denial. It was only when it was so in their face that they couldn't get away from it. I mean, it's all these little one-off things. Well, that thing happened over there, and he tripped over there and fell down, and he didn't know how to get off stage over there at that thing, but it was like a bad day. And over here, he was tired, and yes, they called a lid on his day at noon, and surely he's had 40% of his time vacationing, during his term of office, and all these things. But those are independent. Those are separate and distinct. They're not all one big issue. It's like those are just pieces, parts of different things here and the other. And then came the debate, which we just refer to as the debate. I mean, it's like 9/11. You just call it 9/11. You don't have to say what year. You just say 9/11. Everybody knows. Now we just refer to as the debate. And so the debate happened, and it was so in their face, they finally had to go, okay, he's messed up. And that's where we are right now. And they're now they're in this complete like self-flagellation mode. What do we do? Whip myself. What do I do? Whip myself. Should we do this? Whip myself some more. It's just awful. And yet, here's the thing, and I keep saying this. From a purely political standpoint, I'm loving it. From a purely, you know, justice is finally being served, I'm loving it. I don't wish ill on the president. What I'm saying is we could see it and we're tired of being gaslighted by them. I'm tired of Karine Jean-Pierre having her little scowl and that little dismissive thing she does and flaunt her hair a little bit and then be done with you. No, I'm glad people are actually pressing her now and making her work and do her job. I'm glad that the White House is on its heels. But here's the other side of this. It's sad, man. And I am sick to death over the fact that we as a nation are the ones who are the recipients of what's going on. It is us paying the bills at the grocery store. It is us watching our energy prices going up. It is us trying to figure out whether we can afford to buy a house. It is us right now who question national security or our southern border or energy independence or trade relations with China. It is us right now who are watching Iran feeling emboldened and sending their proxies to attack Israel and to launch missiles into the ships that are sailing past the Houthis. Listen, we're the recipients of their cover-up. We're the beneficiaries of their breach of fiduciary duty. We're the ones who bear the brunt of it. All right, that was a little mini rant. Call that what it will, but that little mini rant right there is just, don't ever lose sight of that, all right? We can look at this and go, see, I told you. Oh, wow, Biden. Hey, about Biden. Oh, Biden, Trump. Oh, politics, yay. Don't ever forget, the policies are what makes it. And you and I, we are the ones who bear the brunt of the policies. Doesn't matter who they put in there. If the Dems win, Biden will be, let's say Biden makes it through the election and he wins. He'll be out in the first year and the vice president will take over. Guarantee. Me personally right now, I have a hard time believing his political career is going to survive the next 3 weeks. I said yesterday, and I need to probably memorialize it on my social media or something, but I said yesterday that I believe what's happening right now is they are clamoring for support, but in the absence of support, they're also clamoring for a negotiation. They're trying to find a soft landing for him and the family. There's going to be pardons, and there's going to be special deals, and there's going to be, you know, a statue built in his honor or something. They're going to memorialize the great Joe Biden administration for all of posterity so that 100 years from now, people look at it and go, that was a really neat man I heard. Okay. But let's talk about the other side of the ticket. Let's talk about the Veep. You ever seen that show, The Veep, by the way? I've only had a chance to watch a few episodes. Crass, a lot of language. The language gets tiresome. I'm talking to Big Rig right now, but I'm talking to all of y'all too. But I swear it's a show about Kamala Harris. I swear it is.
Why do you say that?
It's Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who used to play on the Seinfeld show. Oh, gosh, I just lost points with John. But anyway, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, she plays the vice president of the United States. And she's kind of bumbling and always trying to get something done and find a way to make her name and asking if the president called yet. Did the president call yet? No, of course not. And it's just, it's hilarious. It's Kamala Harris. It's got Kamala Harris written all over it. The only thing is, she's not a woman of color. So we can't say she was a true DEI hire, but she's... It's Kamala Harris. But let's talk about the Veep for a minute. I can't stress enough how important the choice that Trump's about to make for vice president is key. Trump's got some standards that he has announced, and I agree with him, that it's got to be somebody who can truly govern on day one. If Trump kicks over in a Big Mac-induced heart attack, we've got to have somebody who can step into the office and inspire the confidence. And I think what we're seeing right now is the ship of state is endangered because we have a president who's incapacitated and a vice president who's inept. That's a bad combination. That means it doesn't matter what you do. You have the inability to run the board, if you know what I'm saying. So think about this. Lyndon Baines Johnson. LBJ was a vice president who took over when Kennedy was shot. How about Gerald Ford? Gerald Ford was a vice president who took over when Nixon resigned. Think about our state politics. Kay Ivey. Kay Ivey's the governor, but she was the lieutenant governor until Robert Bentley stepped down and she became the governor. Who you have waiting in the wings matters. Our own personal history as a state and fairly recent history as a nation says that the choice for the number two on the ticket, the second in line to the Oval Office or the governor's office or whatever, it is so key. You got to have somebody who can do the job on day one because they are one heartbeat away from having to do it. Now, okay, well, they just got Kamala in to get votes. They did, and I understand that. And I'll be honest with you, I know that's part of the calculus. And I'm okay with that as long as it's not the only part of the calculus. With Kamala Harris, they did not choose her because she's going to be a great president. If we need somebody, well, it'll be awesome. No. What they did was they said, she's a woman of color, and she comes from California, which means a lot of votes, and she's a liberal. So, and this is like DEI written for us, so yay. And that's what they got. And here we are. I can look back to some vice presidents, whether you like them or not. I can think, okay, Dick Cheney. If something had happened to Bush, even though I look back now and there's questions I have about, you know, Bush doctrine and some of the things they did, I still look at it and go, I know for a fact that if they called at 3 a.m, Dick Cheney could have gone to the Situation Room and handled a crisis. I believe that. I look back at, I tell you what, I'll give a little credit where credit's due. Even back during the Obama administration, if something had happened to Obama, the Joe Biden we used to know back then, I might have thought he was a knucklehead. I might have thought that his policies were bad, but I don't think he was incapacitated and unable to govern at the time. I believe that he could have done the job, whether I liked the outcome or not, he could have done the job. Now I don't think he can even do the job. So all I'm saying is this, folks. Who they pick for the vice president is one of the biggest decisions that we're facing in modern history. All the more so given that Joe Biden is sitting on Kamala Harris's, you know, desk every single day as she watches to see if anything's going to come across her news feed that suddenly she's the president. And the rest of the world's waiting with bated breath because they're scared to death of Kamala Harris. At the same time, Trump is 78 years old. He's vigorous. He still plays golf on a regular basis. He seems to be mentally sharp as a tack. He's decisive. He knows what his agenda is and how he's going to move forward on it. He's used to running operations and he's used to being a president and he's used to running major corporations. I get it. But he's still 78 years old. Who he picks to be his vice president has got to be somebody who can jump in there and do the job on day one if necessary. That's where we are. All right, we're going to come right back, though, and I'm going to tell you some things they used to say about Kamala Harris and what they're saying now. And then we'll jump into what's the short list for Trump? Who's he got on his short list? Who's going to be on the ticket with him? I got a few thoughts. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. So here's a story from CNN from 2020. 2020, Phil, you went to CNN 2020? Yes, I did. I thought it would be instructive to look back at the puff pieces that were done about the Vice President Kamala Harris back in the day. Because, you know, it was all the thing. It was like, oh my gosh, everybody's fawning. Oh, this is awesome. Oh, the media love. Oh, her campaign announced that she had been, that he had picked Senator, his campaign announced that he had picked Senator Kamala Harris of California as his vice presidential nominee just after 4 p.m. Eastern time on August 11th of 2020. Harris, who ran unsuccessfully for the Democrat presidential nomination, had been the front runner to be Biden's pick for months because, well, she simply made sense, said CNN. Oh, Lord, you can see where this article's going. I mean, consider this, says CNN, in 2020. She's been vetted on the national stage due to her own 2020 bid. Yeah, she vetted and she lost. Like badly, like almost irrecoverably. She has experience in government as both a California Attorney General and a U.S. Senator. Well, now, at 55 years old, she represents a younger generation of leader. I thought age did not matter, but okay. She was also the first Black and South Asian American woman. No, not really, but okay. In other words, DEI had a little play in here. She's from California. Well, there's that political calculus. Got to get those votes. California got a lot of votes out there. Let's bring them all in. She emerged as an outspoken voice on race and the need for police reform. Well, CNN laid it out there for us in 2020. They thought that was a good thing. How'd that play out? And they say no one else on Biden's VP shortlist checks so many boxes. Biden and his team, they didn't even feel the need to reach for a less predictable pick. They knew that while picking Harris would draw some considerable attention, it would also be the best thing that people expected them to do. Well, now, isn't that just make you feel rosy? A little warm and fuzzy, all good inside. If you're Joe Biden making your third run for the president and ahead in virtually every swing state, nationally over President Donald Trump, every day between now and November 3rd, you want to do nothing that threatens to change the underlying dynamics of the race. In other words, she was the safe pick. There wouldn't be anybody wanting to burn down the house. Oh, who else did they consider? Well, there was U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Susan Rice. That little Benghazi thing got in her way. There was Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms, although I don't know that I could say Vice President Bottoms for the next 4 years. But anyway, she was one of the considerations. But, you know, she did have a bit of a trouble with crime on her watch in Atlanta. Then there was California Representative Karen Bass. Who? Yeah. Harris, by contrast, had no obvious weakness the Trump campaign could exploit. Really? You don't think so? Pretty sure they did. But here's the bottom line. That was 2020. Here we are today. If all that was true, if everything they just said was true, do you think that we'd be looking at a Vice President Harris going forward, or we'd be looking at President Harris going forward? Do you think we'd be looking at meetings where they're talking about, what do we do? No, they'd be saying, Kamala can do it. We'll stand by Kamala. Kamala can do it. Tell Joe it's time to retire. We'll make it a soft landing. They'd be openly saying, we look forward to working with President Harris. Nope. They are scared to freaking death of a President Kamala Harris. Here's a story from Red State. Granted, I know I went from CNN 2020 to Red State 2024. I know my sources. But this one says, as speculation continues to swirl around the frenzied campaign to replace Joe Biden, and just who that replacement might be, several blue state governors have been widely reported, people like Gavin Newsom from California and Gretchen Whitmer from Michigan. Vice President Kamala Harris has almost been an afterthought. How did we get so far? How did we go down the road from the 2020 CNN glowing diatribe? Well, I think reality finally set in. The article points out Harris was a failed presidential candidate and was, of course, picked in 2020 for DEI-esque reasons, as Joe Biden was under immense pressure from the time to select a woman of color for his VP nominee or else. He settled on Harris to try and quiet the wokesters in his party, the same ones who are now threatening to blow the party up should the DNC overlook Harris and replace her with a white man. Gavin Newsom, your biggest handicap, dude, is you are a white dude. That's the worst thing that could happen to you in the Democrat Party, apparently, right now. Don't be a white dude. Although they picked the whitest of white dudes ever when they picked Joe Biden. Like, he's so white, he's clear. I mean, the guy is about as pasty as is a piece of day-old pasta. Anyway. As the media puff pieces about Kamala crank up, the open secret is also once again bubbling to the surface, one that I believe is fueling an anybody but Kamala panic on Capitol Hill. They already know. They have a modern day problem. Democrats don't want to elevate the vice president to presidential nominee role in this situation because they know deep down she's just not very good at what she does, as evidenced by the fact that there's nothing she's done since taking office that disproves that very inconvenient fact. Okay. Nothing? Nothing at all? Well, hang on a second. Let me review the record of this VP. National Review, Dateline yesterday. What's she done? Well, she supported pro-Palestinian protesters. Oh. Yeah, we can't campaign on that. What else has she done? Well, story here from Washington Examiner. She was also placed in the position of being the border czar. Oh, dang. We can't use that. Okay, well, she was also, oh, by the way, she was put in charge of the messaging about the economy. Oh, crap. We can't use that either. Wait. Okay, hang on a second. She's been very loyal to President Biden and has openly said, even in recent weeks, that he's in tip-top shape and there's not any issue to worry about. Oh, God. How can we put her in the position then if we say he's not capable because she's been working with him? You see what I'm saying? Who you pick for vice president, it means something. We're going to come back and I'll unpack that more, and then I'm going to dive right on in to what's Trump doing. They just had a story on Fox News. I just watched it during the break. It's getting tight. He says he doesn't have a choice yet, but we think we know who the short list is. We'll talk about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all of the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Welcome to hour number two on this Taco Tuesday. So I'm gonna take a little more time here and unpack this vice president discussion we're having. Number one, Triple Dipper, Veep Steaks. I'll take a few text messages first and keep those caught up. Let's see here. Steve from Tennessee says, James Clyburn should pay a price for being Joe's initial enabler and the root cause of his election. Shame on James. You know what? Steve, I'm not arguing that point. You're right. And there's several more that I would add to that list. Not the least of which is the vice president and I would say the first lady. What else we got here? Pastor Barnes from Hartzell says, Phil, given his mental incapacity, is anything Biden signed or will sign even valid or legally binding? Well, first of all, there's been no legal determination of incapacity. And I'll just tell you as an attorney that there has to be a judicial determination for incapacity or at the very least a medical diagnosis that accompanies a concern of incapacity. Right now, everything's fair game. But if they invoked the 25th Amendment or did something like that, which we'll talk about later, then it would cease all ability to, I would think, cease all ability then to govern, which includes signing executive orders. And we could also call into question certain things, but they would still be considered valid until overturned. Jeff from Indiana again says, Trump's vice presidential pick has to be ready to step into the presidency in 4 years. So if it needs to be someone that's electable. I agree with that. Harris from Athens. I couldn't stop laughing when 2 or 3 years ago after Kamala Harris during a junket in Australia, their press labeled her as the cackling nincompoop. Golly. Yeah. John from Huntsville again says, Phil, I could be wrong, but I have a strong gut feeling Trump's going to choose Marco Rubio to be his VP. I just think he'd be the best choice for the job, and something happened to Trump, I think he'd make a great president. John, I'm going to go ahead and tell you I agree with you. That's where I am. Big Rig was asking me during a break, who do you like? I like several folks, and I'll talk about that short list here in a minute, but Marco Rubio, I think, would do a great job. Barry from Athens, are all political women from Atlanta named for, oh my gosh, okay, I'm not even going to go there. I'm just going to, thank you, Barry. Appreciate you. Next time I'll read the text before I read it out loud. All right, let's wrap this thing up. So Kamala Harris, finishing up the VP discussion about the Democrat side, Kamala Harris recently came out straddling the fence on the anti-Israel student protesters on college campuses. Story from the National Review, Dateline, yesterday. Listen, this is what we would be seeing constantly as a president. Okay, where are the polls? What do I do? If I say this, what will they say about me? I don't know. Maybe I should make a decision that sort of gives a little bit of something to both sides. Yeah, that's what we'll do. Now, that's called splitting the baby. That's called fence straddling. That's called appeasement. I mean, she literally said with regards to the pro-Palestinian protesters, well, they're just showing exactly what the human emotion should be as a response to Gaza. There are things some of these protesters saying that I absolutely reject, so I don't mean to wholesale endorse their points, but we do have to navigate it. I understand the emotion behind it. That's called crap. That's called equivocation. That's called just basically saying, I don't know what to do, so I'm going to try and please everybody. And you can't be president of the United States and do that. All right, listen, I'm going to quit talking about Kamala. We're going to start talking about Trump's picks here. All right, before I do that, I got a phone call. Let me grab it real quick. Is that Wolverine Dan? Wolverine Dan, line one. How you doing, buddy?
My friend doing quite well. I like Doug Bergman, my friend.
Okay, all right.
The man's a businessman before he became governor. And you know what? I think our President Trump did a pretty darn good job when he was in office. He's a businessman. So therefore, less career politicians. I want a politician that used to be a businessman that had to put food on a table for him and his family. It was very successful. And the debacle we have right now, again, I said it maybe on a couple shows ago, I'm really concerned that all these countries are watching this, and they're saying how sad we are. We're imploding from within, just like the Roman Empire. And you know, I'm going to tell you what, Bill, these China and these powerhouses seeing this, it's not safe. To me, I don't feel as safe as I could be in this country with the politicians we have running this country. Don't you agree?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely agree. That's what I said earlier, too. I mean, it may be questions about Biden's health, but we're the ones who have to live with the results, part of which is our national security is at risk.
Exactly. But I think that's a good tick. I think that's the ticket. Those two guys, my former president and Doug Bourbon, I think that, too. Sound businessmen, they make great decisions, sound decisions, and he's a good governor. So,
all right, let me ask you this from the political perspective, because the political calculus is going to wind up weighing into this. Does Doug Burgum bring enough to the ticket to excite the voters who are wondering about what's going to happen?
Well, you know what? If you're voting because you get excited, then you've got a problem. You should be voting for necessities and common sense. And stability. That's what I'm voting for. And you know me, I have to have a good time and enjoy myself, and it's because I earned it. But you know what? I like stability. I like someone that can run a business that's been through the fire and came out pristine. And that's what I think Bergman is.
All right. So you just described what a lot of people are saying. They want steady state. They want the ability for someone to bring some calm and some order and some reason to the decision making in the White House.
I agree. And, you know, Bill, there's so much stuff on the internet and crap, and people are buying into some of the stuff they see and surfing the internet and whatnot. Come on now. Let's turn that off for a second, and let's talk one-on-one and do the right thing and show that, you know, you're a part of the solution, not the problem. And you keep looking at the, you know, internet and being popular and excited. And I'll screw all that, because that ain't going to get you where you need to be. You need someone that's stable, rock solid, that's going to make right decisions and stay with decisions that he might not be popular with, like you just said, but it's best for the country.
Well, and I'll tell you one thing he does add to the fray, and I was about to get into this, but I'll say it now, is he is not going to wind up affecting the majority in the Senate because he's not a senator. A lot of these other choices could upset the balance of power, which we're going to have a majority in the House and Senate to really get something done. So Doug Burgum does bring that. He's not going to upset the balance of power in the Senate.
Exactly. You know what? You're a smart dude. That's why you own your own dang show. Hey, that said, man, one more thing.
Yeah.
How about those Wolverines? Talk to you later.
Whoop, whoop.
All right. Thank you, Wolverine Dan. Appreciate you, as always. I got a great audience. That was good analysis. So, listen, here's the bottom line. Let's do this. Trump, what's he going to do? Right now, Washington Examiner, New York Post, another Washington Examiner, Newsweek, they're all saying that the Trump list, the short list, is down to three. Now, there are still good people like Tim Scott. I like Tim Scott a lot. There's still even Ben Carson that's been talked about in the mix. But right now, the short list, story here on Washington Examiner, Dateline 2 days ago, says the primary candidates for the VP slot are Senators J.D. Vance of Ohio, Marco Rubio of Florida, and Doug Burgum, former governor of North Dakota. Okay, that's your short list according to all of the punditry. Now, Trump could surprise us. He could do something that we don't see coming. He's great at having his own mind. But I believe those three, though, are seriously in the mix. Now, I'll be honest with you. Of those three, I like Marco Rubio. I like his style. I like his ability to be an orator of the facts. I like his ability to be decisive. I don't recall disagreeing with him on any political stances. Doug Burgum, I like Doug Burgum. In fact, I even said during the primaries when they were doing the debates, I think I even said to Charlene one night, who's this guy Burgum? I like everything he said, but does he even have a chance? Well, if he gave enough of an answer for me to perk up and start paying attention back then, I could see it. I could see it. J.D. Vance, I like J.D. Vance. I'd like to see J.D. Vance have a little more time under his belt before he does this. I like J.D. Vance. He's been a business guy. I like J.D. Vance because he's got strong opinions and he's got a populist base. But I don't know that he's there yet. I do think Marco Rubio and Doug Burgum are the top two of those three. I also like Tim Scott. I feel like Tim Scott has earned a position somewhere in the administration. I feel like all these guys have. Here's my dream team. If I had to say it, my dream team right now is either Rubio or Burgum, but I like Rubio the most as VP. Burgum, I think he's absolutely an economic advisor, or at the very least, one of the cabinet secretaries. I like Senator Tom Cotton as a defense secretary. I like Vivek Ramaswamy to come in and be a cabinet level position, economic advisor or something like that, energy secretary. I could see that. I also like several other people, like Elise Stefanik, who's still being talked about. I can see her having a position. Listen, we have one pundit who said it's almost an embarrassment of riches that we have this many choices. And that's one of the things that really gets me. As I look at it and go, the Democrats have put up the worst possible candidates, one who degenerated right before the eyes, their other one who they lied about and said she'd be awesome, but in truth, they don't want her in the position. They're scared to death of her. So who are they going to bring in? The governor of California? I mean, for the love of God, that's all they've got? Well, they're not going to put up Nancy Pelosi. She's not going to run. They're not going to put up Chuck Schumer. He's not going to run. None of the other House and Senate members are the least bit attractive as a candidate. This is what they got. Are they going to dredge Hillary Clinton up out of the background? Psh, doubtful. Michelle Obama's not going to run for it. She's happy being rich and formerly famous. I can't see that happening. On the Republican side, I'm happy with this short list. Now, I will say this. Which story have I got? I'm going to end with this, I guess, because I'm about out of time on this. I've run this segment for a while. So let's do this. Newsweek. Dateline yesterday. Stephen Miller, former Donald Trump advisor, was talking about Trump's choosing of a VP. He says he believes we'll have a choice this week. Well, think about it. The national convention starts Monday. So I'd say we have to. But that's going to happen. We're going to know in the next few days. We might even know tonight. Who knows? If you look at it, there's a few telltales. You got Rubio has just cleared his schedule to be at a rally with Trump in Florida. And I believe that is, what, tomorrow night? That's interesting. But then you got Trump doing, actually it's tonight. Then you got Trump doing another rally on Saturday in Pennsylvania, not far from where J.D. Vance lives. That's interesting. But then you got this. Stephen Miller says, yeah, we're going to know this week. And then he also says, President Trump has said his criteria is whoever he picks needs to be able to step in and do the job on day one. I couldn't ask for a better criteria. Conservative, Republican, fully capable of doing the job on day one. I want to see somebody who is vigorous enough to not only do the job as VP, but step in there and run again in a few years potentially. I want to see somebody who doesn't embarrass us on the world stage. I want to see somebody who tackles the issues and is in the Situation Room with the president making the decisions jointly as a team. I want to see a ticket that fires up the base and gets them proud to be able to go to the polls and vote and not just vote because they got to. I want to see something that jazzes people, brings in votes, sure, but brings in confidence. I want to see somebody who can rise to the occasion should the call come. I'm just telling you, the VP pick is one of the most important things we've got in this entire political season. All right, that's it. I'm going to call that one done, man. We baked that cake. Let's take a break right now. We'll come right back and let's do a little Adventures in Woke World. Oh, man. It's going to be a good one. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. Be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. I mean, like, man, giving you all the truth you could sling on a bumper sticker. A couple of text messages real quick to kind of wrap up that segment. JT from Madison says, Now, I don't think Rubio could be the VP. Can't be both from the same state. Okay, there's questions about that. One of the articles I didn't even get to, JT, great point. The electors cannot cast their ballots for a president and vice president both of the same state, which, of course, brings to bear the question, if Kamala winds up becoming the presidential nominee, can they have Gavin Newsom because they're both from California? Well, the solution to that is you basically change your state of residency. If Rubio wanted to say, I now live in Washington, D.C., he could do that. Just a formal change of address at the last second. And it's been done, and I'm trying to think who it was, but it's been done in recent years, is my recollection. So, yes, I agree. Trump claims New York as his state of residence, excuse me, Florida as his state of residence, and so does Rubio. And so that may be a thing. Maybe they want to avoid the calculus. Maybe they want to keep open the ability to beat up on a potential Harris-Newsom ticket. And so Rubio's not it. I'm sure that's being considered and weighed. But I'm aware that he could change his state of residency, you know, with basically a forwarding address. Linda from Madison says, question, I have heard that legally, there's the same question. Linda, you're sharp, says, question, I've heard that legally the president and vice president could be the same state. Is this true? It cannot be from the same state. I just described that. Gary from Decatur says, Doug Burgum has some inside baseball antics going on in North Dakota. His continuing politics in North Dakota would be a heavy lift. However, that probably wouldn't affect his ability to govern in the second highest office in the country. Yeah, and so here's the bottom line. If you don't think he's been vetted by now, we are days away from if he's on the short list and we're days away from the national convention, I can just tell you he's been looked at and looked at and looked at. And oh, by the way, he successfully ran for governor. So that means he was able to prevail at the polls at his level. And, you know, typically speaking, North Dakota politics don't threaten the state. There's not a polarization of politics there. So Doug Burgum does bring that. He's not coming in as the governor of California where everything's crazy, or the governor of Florida, senator of Florida, where everything's crazy in the other direction. I mean, in a good way. I like the way they do it in Florida. Paul from Huntsville, wasn't Dick Cheney originally from Texas? Yes, that's what it was. Paul, thank you very much. That's what it was. Dick Cheney was originally from Texas, and he moved his state of residency back to his original home state of Wyoming. That's what it was. So he and Bush could both run together. Thank you, Paul Square. I've got a great audience. A great audience. All right, listen, we're going to come back from this break, and I'm going to jump on into some adventures in woke world. The first story I've got, by the way, comes from Alabama. It is a story that is making liberal heads explode, in my opinion. Has to do with your Second Amendment. Has to do with what you can buy in a grocery store? Yeah, we'll talk about it. It's kind of cool, and I really want to find out more about this company, so stay tuned for that. Adventures in Woke World coming up right after the break. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, I'm talking about Alabama. Y'all, I mean, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Hey, listen, before I go any further, I gotta tell you guys about our latest advertiser on the show. So bottom line is I'm about to tell you something big, and I'm going to give you something free. So stand by. You ready? This being the crazy world that it is, I know my audience out there, a bunch of right-side ruffians, a lot of y'all are doing what you can to put away for your retirement. At the same time, you're the kind of people who stand up for what you believe in, right? That being said, what if you found out that some of your investments were going to things that are absolutely contrary to what you say you believe in? Happens all the time. It does. So maybe, that being the case, maybe it's time for you to meet Paul Breyer and his team of PhDs and financial experts at Inspire Advisors. Inspire Advisors. Look, y'all, I'm talking about financial planners who consider who you are and what you believe in as much as your bottom line. These are solid local experts. They use biblically responsible investing, data-driven strategies. They'll maximize your return. They do it in a way that affects your bottom line positively, yes, but it also affects your world positively. This is what I call financial freedom. No kidding. So here's the free thing. You ready? Maybe you might want to check and see, where's my stuff going now? What's in my portfolio? Well, you can get a free impact report. a free impact report from their website. Go to www.moneypatternwealth.com. That's Inspire Advisors at moneypatternwealth.com. You can also go to our website, rightsidemedia.org. That's rightsidemedia.org. Click on our sponsors tab, go to their logo and click on that. It takes you right to their website. Bottom line is this, y'all. It is conservative, it's godly, it's balanced, it's financial freedom, it's Inspire Advisors at moneypatternwealth.com. All right, listen, before I jump into my dipper, I gotta tell you, there's a tweet that I just saw. Colin Rugg, who I follow on Twitter, just posted in the last half hour-ish. He said, just in, Fox News' Peter Doocy trolls Karine Jean-Pierre by asking if the Pentagon has to call Jill Biden if somebody launches a nuke past 8 p.m. It's brutal. Doocy, here's a question. Doocy said, Biden's sharpest before 8 p.m. So say the Pentagon at some point picks up an incoming nuke. It's 11 p.m. Who do you call? The First Lady? And KJP says, he has a team that lets him know of any news that's pertinent and important to the American people. And just move right on past it. Nicely done. That was awesome. Probably you could probably do a laugh track on that one too. Just saying, man. Just listen. Go ahead and scarf up some points. There you go. That's nice. All right. Look, every once in a while, when I'm getting ready for the show, I'm sitting there early in the morning, and I do what I call resourcing. So I start working through the dippers. And today I had one on Veep Stakes. I got another one on the 25th Amendment. I had, you know, all this time spent on these. But I keep seeing stories and I'm like, oh my gosh, the wokeness. What the woke people are doing. Look at all the stuff that I would call woke. And I find myself with what I like to refer to as a buffet of wokeness, a veritable smorgasbord of woke, like a vast charcuterie board filled with woke. It's a plethora. It's a cornucopia. It's a lot. It's what we like to call adventures in woke world.
Adventures in woke world.
Yeah. Now listen, the first story I got is not necessarily so woke. I just know that there are wokists out there whose heads are exploding right now. And it's from Alabama. I am loving this. In fact, I want to track down this company. Anybody out there knows the company called American Rounds? Tell them I want to talk to them. I mean, this is just cool. So if you've not heard this, Yellowhammer News right here in Alabama has a story. Dateline yesterday. Two vending machine kiosks now allow users to purchase gun ammunition at grocery stores in Tuscaloosa and Pell City, with more locations coming across the state. What? So you got a Coke machine, you got the ice machine, and you got the bullet machine standing right there in a grocery store. Come on. And I got to tell you right now, there are libs freaking out. There's people in California going, oh my God, what are they doing in Alabama? They're selling bullets in the grocery store. Well, they are a staple of life. Thank you very much. American Rounds portrays itself as the first automated ammo retail dispenser and targeted Pell City due to its affinity for hunting in the area. The stores were really the inspiration. They knew their customer base and came to us thinking this would be a really good opportunity, said an American Rounds representative in a video. A lot of hunting opportunities here in Pell City. They thought their customers would love it. The COO of the Fresh Value stores that took these on says, we're super excited to offer what we think is the first ammo kiosk. We're always looking for more ways to give our customers another reason to come visit our stores. And based on the feedback we've gotten, they are so excited. That's just awesome. You can go put a nickel in a machine and get some bullets. Now, not really. There's going to be a price differential than the nickel I just said, but the machines are about the size of a refrigerator. And by the way, I don't know what all the ammo they sell. I need to look this up. Somebody knows, you can call and tell me. If anybody's used the machine yet, let me know how it goes. Is it good doings or is it bad doings? But I love the fact they're trying. The machine's roughly the size of a refrigerator. Take identification for age verification, and they use a 360-degree facial recognition, interesting, to confirm that customers are purchasing the ammunition legally. That's just awesome. So basically what happens is you show your photo ID to the machine, it scans it in, and then probably uses facial recognition to compare you to the picture on the ID to verify that you didn't just borrow mommy's card and go buy bullets. But all said and done, I can tell you right now, the anti-Second Amendment crowd is apoplectic. They are beyond it. They are trying to grope their way around the room right now, blinded by their own incredulity. This is awesome. Vending machines dispensing bullets in a grocery store. That is America right there. People in Europe cannot figure this out. They're doing, what did you say? Oh, blimey. They've got bullets in a machine. Yeah, we actually do. Adventures in Woke World, and it starts in Alabama. Looking forward to more of this. Anybody out there knows American Rounds, the company, you just tell them to call on in. I want to talk to them. All right, listen. As we do Adventures in Woke World, how many times have we had snowflake issues? I mean, it's like dandruff on a person's shoulder. Snowflakes are everywhere. They're just, you got to watch it. Snowflakes. You know, life's hard. So they have to have someone rescue them and give them a way out. And don't use trigger words and make sure you use my pronouns and all those kinds of things. Well, all right. Big Rig, y'all ever play board games in your house? Is that a thing?
Oh, yeah. My wife loves board games.
Okay.
The kids do too.
Okay. It's actually a huge learning tool.
Yeah.
Listen.
I play Candyland a few times a week.
Listen, and Pretty Princess, if you ever play that with your daughter,
haven't yet.
You're a hero. I'm just going to tell you right now. I have many times put on the crown and played Pretty Princess with my daughter when she was little bitty. I'm playing checkers with my grandson. He's not quite 5 years old. It's a little embarrassing how many times he's double jumped me. But he's smart. I mean, I was telling him last night. He's not quite 5 years old, and I told him, I said, buddy, I am so proud of you because I said things to you last week, and you repeated them back to me this week. You were listening. These board games, they teach you stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. How many times on Candyland or Chutes and Ladders or whatever else have one of the kids rolled the wrong dice or made the wrong move or drove the wrong card?
My daughter, she flips when she loses.
Tears and gnashing of teeth.
And I'm trying to get her to learn how to lose, you know, honorably.
There you go. All right. What happens if they make the game so soft and easy that it has no lessons or there's no winners and losers anymore?
And then it doesn't really teach you nothing.
Thank you. That's why you work here. All right. So bottom line is this. Scrabble went woke.
I wonder how. Okay, tell me.
So the company Mattel, the maker of the game, story here that came out in April, actually. Fox News has the story. Mattel, the maker of the game, found that the younger Gen Z people don't like the competitive nature of the game as much as older generations do, they say. They said the newer version would be easier and more inclusive. So you can still get old Scrabble. You can still put down words, have to spell them correctly, and you only get points if the word's real and yada yada. Certain letters get more points than others. Teaches you about the language. Teaches you about competitiveness. Teaches you how to think ahead. Be intuitive. No. Not with New Scrabble. New Scrabble is going to allow you to have a less competitive version where you can do Scrabble with helper cards and hints, simpler scoring systems, be able to quicker play, and you can also play in teams so somebody can help you because, wow.
So they basically just made it not fun.
They basically said, do y'all want words? We can do words if you want to. Listen. This is a sign of the times, but they are literally saying, and here's the red flag. When Ray Adler, the vice president and global head of games at Mattel, said, Scrabble has truly stood the test of time as one of the most popular board games in history, and we want to ensure the game continues to be inclusive for all players. What they basically just threw up a red flag on was, it's super great. It's been around forever and it's always worked and no one's ever had a problem with it, but we're just scared that it's going to not be inclusive enough and we need some DEI points. So Scrabble just got woke, just so you know. It's Snowflake Scrabble.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Well, it's because the new age of kids now, you know, they have no patience. They don't want to look for a word. They just want the word right in front of them. They want hints.
But it's not the way you're raising your kids.
No.
It's not the way my kids were raised. It's not the way my grandkids are being raised.
You got to go hunt for that answer.
Or maybe we're just right.
Yeah.
There you go. Take me to a break, Big Rig. We'll do that and come right back. I got a whole bunch of adventures in Woke World. What did Duke Medical School say timeliness and individualism is really a sign of? you can probably already guess. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, Adventures in Woke World. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, just making common sense like a superpower. All right. So, hey, listen, I'm in Adventures in Woke World. Every once in a while, I see stuff and I go, that can't be real. That can't be happening. Okay, it happened. So I got a story here from Fox News. Some of y'all might have to pull over. You're driving. I know you're out there on the roads. Just listen. Just make sure your seatbelt's on and get off the cruise control while I give you this next story, because it may cause you to jerk the wheel. So Duke Medical School. By the way, this is not a fly-by-night California-based. This is Duke. Duke Medical School. Duke Medical School story here at Dateline today on Fox News. Duke Medical School claims that it is white supremacy culture to expect people of color to be on time. You heard me. To be on time. In a strategic... But let me just point out something. Wokeness insults the people that it claims to be supporting. Think about it. It's like saying, if you're black, we can't expect you to be on time because that's just too much for you. How insulting is this? Anyway, Duke Medical School claims that it's white supremacy culture to expect people of color to be on time. The medical school has a plan called the Catalyze Anti-Racist Practice Through Education. The plan is titled Dismantling Racism and Advancing Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion in the School of Medicine. Oh boy. The guide, praised by the school's dean, called out what it deemed white supremacy culture with its purported nitpicking of being on time, having a dress code, speech, and work style. It also contains a series of negative terminologies vis-a-vis the work culture, the white culture. Here's a quote from the actual plan. You ready? Quote, white supremacy culture is the idea or ideology that white people and their ideas, thoughts, beliefs, and actions of white people are superior to people of color in their thoughts, ideas, beliefs, and actions. That's called racism. I get it. If you're sitting around going, well, I'm white, therefore I'm more right than you, well, then you're a racist. If you're saying, I'm right, here's my reasons for being right, and I could care less what your skin color is, that's called being confident. It could be called braggadocious, but it may generally be speaking of someone who just has a confidence and a position that they're willing to stand up for. But it goes on to say, white supremacy culture is power hoarding at the disadvantage of... Power hoarding. White supremacy culture is power hoarding. Here's another quote for you. Stand by. Brace yourselves. Quote, in the workplace, white supremacy culture explicitly and implicitly privileges whiteness and discriminates against non-Western and non-white professionalism standards related to dress code,